Thank you. So this morning we are talking about the idea of transforming communities. You can see from the slide that the church, I'm not quite sure, vision, motto, is transforming lives, communities and culture. Oz spoke on transforming lives a few weeks ago. He asked me to speak on the next two, communities and culture. So this morning I'm talking about transforming communities, and I'm just going to share some of the things I thought about while I was thinking through this topic. It's not an official, you know, this is officially what everyone was thinking of when they were thinking about transforming communities. This is what I think of when I was thinking about transforming communities. And the first thing I wanted to say this morning, the very first thing, is that God thinks communities are important. God is big on communities, on relationships generally. I'm sure I've stood here and said this before. If you remember at the very beginning when God created everything, he, you know, created everything and looked and said, hey, that's pretty good. And he made this world, and then so there was something bad about this world, something bad. What was the bad thing about creation? Well, you know what it was? It wasn't the sin that came into creation. It wasn't the serpent, Adam or Eve, or anything like that. Do you remember before that something God said? He said, it is not good that man is alone. It's not good for man to be alone. And then he goes on to create Eve. So the first thing that was wrong with creation, the first thing that was bad about it, was a lack of relationships, a lack of community. That was the first thing God said was wrong with what he created. That's how important it is. Before sin, before anything else, God said, no, there needs to be relationships. That was the first thing God said was wrong. So it's important to think of ourselves not just as individuals who need to be transformed, though we are, but also we do as community, in relationships. We're not just transformed in isolation. We don't just exist in isolation. We exist in communities, and it's important for us to think at the very beginning as we look at this topic that God wants us to be a community, and he wants us to be a community that transforms other communities, not just individuals, but communities. That's what he wants. So the very beginning, again, after creation, after a few, you know, a few things have gone on, and God's people, Israel, are in slavery in Egypt, and Moses comes along, and God uses him to set them free, and he brings them out of Egypt, and God says, right, I'm going to set up a community. I'm going to set up a people, my people. So at the very beginning in Exodus, what does God say about the people he's setting up? Now, if you obey me fully and keep my covenant, then out of all the nations, you will be my treasured possession. Although the whole earth is mine, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. This is one of the things God said right at the beginning when he was saying, right, you're going to be my people and this is how I want you to live. And you know that sometimes when someone starts something, they at the very beginning lay out, right, this is my vision for the whole project, if you like. That's one of the things we're supposed to do when we're sort of sharing, communicating. God does that here. He says one of the very first things he says at the beginning is, you will be for me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. And one of the things you need to realize and remember is the role of the priest in the Old Testament. You know, we're in the living after Christ has come and died for us, and we don't live under the law anymore, and our worship reflects that. But in the Old Testament, the way they worshipped is they had priests. And the role of the priest was if you wanted to get to God, you had to come through a priest. You had to come, go follow the sacrificial system and all those kind of things. So the priest, the role of the priest was to kind of be an intercessor between God and man, to mediate God's presence. And God says, I want a whole nation of priests, a whole nation of people who sort of intercede for other people around me. In other words, God's vision was for Israel to be a nation that enabled other people outside of Israel to come to God. That was his vision. God's vision was for the nations around Israel to look at Israel and say, hey, that actually looks like a good way to live. That looks like a good way to live. There's something about this God thing that they keep talking about. So by transforming Israel, God's vision was for the nations around them to be transformed. This runs throughout the Old Testament. It's one of the themes of the Old Testament, this idea that when God calls Israel and sets them apart to be different, one of his purposes is that so the nations around them will see something they want. See something they want to come to, something they want to be a part of. And this is really important because Israel, one of the mistakes Israel made is they took all the things God had given them and they said, you know what? We're special. We're different. And rather than saying, we're calling other nations to be special too, they said, so we've got to keep these guys at arm's length. We're God's chosen ones. We're important and everyone else, keep them away. Keep them away. And this is important because another failing we can be as a community is we can think because we are God's people, the goal of that is we've got to keep other people away. We've got to keep all the other communities around us at arm's length, otherwise they'll contaminate us or they'll infect us. That was never God's purpose. That was never what God envisioned for his people. It's not what God envisions for his community, a community that keeps other communities at arm's length. God's vision is for transformed communities that in turn transform other communities. Have something that communities look at and say, wow, I want that. We want that. We want to function like that. There's something there that we need. God, when it comes to us and them, God is not interested in us and them. He's only ever interested in making more us's. That's what he does. That was his vision from the beginning, and Israel didn't get it. Churches don't get it. A lot of Christian communities don't get it because there are so many things that we can use to put barriers up and say, well, we do it this way. You, other communities out there, do it that way. Let's keep them away. There are so many different ways we can put barriers up. And God's vision is not for that. It's for something completely different. The question then is, what does it mean, I think, to be a transformed community? That's, I suppose, what I want to talk about mostly this morning. What does it look like to be a community that is different from all the other communities? A type of community that other communities look at and say, you know, they've got something different. There's something special about them. There's something actually that looks pretty good. That's attractive about what they do. God, as I said, at the very beginning, God said it's not good for us to be alone. And we know that. I think every one of us longs to be a part, not just different individual, but we long to be a part of something bigger, a community. We long to be in a group with people who make us feel, I suppose, like we're important, we're loved, that give us a sense of purpose. I think we all want that. Even the most extreme sort of introverts of us, I think, want other people to accept us, to welcome us. We want to be part of some kind of community. And the question, I suppose, I want us to think about really is, are we that type of community? Is Barton Church that type of community? A community that other people think, I want to be a part of that. Other communities look at and think, wow, they've got something good there. I want to know more about that. What does it look like to be a transformed community practically? Well, I think one good, you know, if you've got a question, it's always a good idea to ask Jesus what he thinks. So Oz has already read a very important part of something Jesus said in John this morning. If you say to Jesus, Jesus, what is it that makes us transformed? What is it that makes us different from the other communities out there? What does he say? He says, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. That's it. That's what Jesus says. That's the identifying mark of one of my communities. They love each other. I tell you, you know, it's a bit strange, isn't it? I think you go to some churches, you see some Christian communities, you think what Jesus actually said was, by this, everyone will know that you're my disciples, by your high moral standards. He doesn't say that. By this, everyone will know that you're my disciples, by your really polished and professional Sunday morning services. Doesn't say that. That's not the mark of a transformed community. It is that they love each other. A transformed community, a Christian community, is a community that is identified not necessarily by what it does, not necessarily what it says, but by how its members treat one another. That's the thing that God says. That's the thing that Jesus says. You know, that's what marks you out as my people, how you treat one another. Are we transformed? Do we treat each other differently to the way other communities treat each other? Is that what makes us different? Is that what makes us stand out? When we talk about how a church works, we often think about the visible, practical things. How does the service run? How do they make decisions? You know, if you look at all the differences between all the denominations, it's mostly those kind of things. How the service works, how they make decisions, you know, who's their structure of authority. Those are the things that sort of distinguish all the different denominations and communities. But it's quite interesting because if you look through the Old Testament and look at how little space, I suppose, the New Testament authors, Paul and the others, devote to those kind of questions. How should we run our service? You know, how should we do this? How should we make decisions? There's very little about how to do that in the letters that Paul writes to his community. On the other hand, if you wanted to say how much of the New Testament writing is concerned with how Christians treat each other and treat people around them, the vast majority of what Paul writes, what James, what John, what the other New Testament authors write, is about how we treat one another. That is the core value of a transformed community, is how we treat each other. Even in those New Testament sections where Paul, for example, when he's writing to the Corinthian church, who are in a real mess, and he's saying to them, you're using gifts wrong, your services are chaotic, you're not doing communion properly. At the heart of every single one of his criticisms and instructions about how to do things is the simple fact that the way you are doing things is treating people badly. The way you are doing your services is a bad way to treat people. The way you're doing communion is terrible because some people are pushing to the front and getting all the food and all the other people are getting pushed to the back. You're doing it wrong. Not because, you know, you're not following the correct kind of order of service, but because the way you're doing things is treating people badly. That is one of the primary messages, I think, of Paul's letters, of all the others, is that the way we treat each other is what marks us out as being a different community. That is the crucial, critical thing. A transformed community is a community where how we treat each other is important. I think it's that simple. And it's not really that people outside this community look in and you don't want them. I mean, it'd be nice, I suppose, if someone said, hey, you know what I admire about them? They've got really professional services. That'd be nice. But that's not really what we should be desiring. What we should be desiring is for community outside to look at us and say, you know, they love each other. They love each other. That's what's different. That's how we stand out. The New Testament, again, is full of these verses, these passages where this message is being sort of force-fed to its readers. John, he's massively hung up on this issue of loving each other. And by the way, we love each other, that's how you demonstrate that you love God. That's how you demonstrate that you're different. That's how you demonstrate that you're transformed, a transformed individual, a transformed community. You see, you can very easily have a community that's made up of individuals who only really are interested in themselves. But one of the goals of being a transformed individual, as Oz was talking about a few weeks ago, was that we form a transformed community. Because I have been transformed, I no longer need to hold on to all the things that I did before I was transformed, and I'm free to love others. And when you get a group of people together, a community of people who are loving each other, that's a very powerful thing. That's something that stands out, that leaves a mark. So are we that kind of community? Because we don't stand a chance of transforming other communities unless we ourselves are transformed in this way, unless we ourselves love each other. But the struggle is, and I know we're all very aware of this, is that there's this part of us that the Bible calls the old nature. All kinds of words, flesh, the sinful nature. There's all this part of us that struggles and kicks, not just against the things God wants to do to us as an individual, but when we get together, that old nature rears its head and we start interacting badly. I mean, it's one thing to sort of be, a good Christian if I'm locked in a room by myself. It's another to be a good Christian once you put me in a group of people. Because when you put me in a group of people, you've got all these old struggles and conflicts, and you start looking at other people and saying, no, I don't like them. They said that thing I don't agree with. I'm jealous of that person. They're so much better off than I am. And all the, and being in relationships with people, being in a community, can actually bring up, stir up this old nature in us and kick against what God wants to do, not just as individuals, but as a community. Heard a story, true story, only in America, it's that kind of story, about a church in America. Some churches, Anglican churches, maybe others, have a thing that they call the sharing of the peace, the passing of the peace. Some of you might be familiar with this. They stop the service halfway through, and everyone gets up and walks around and says hello and kisses people on the cheek. And I've been to a few Anglican churches where this has happened, and I'm ambivalent about it, because on practice I think, actually, that's a really good thing. That's a really good thing. But the reality is, I struggle with it. I find it hard enough when Oz or someone says, the children are out, turn to the person next to you and say something. I'm usually sitting next to my wife and I struggle. So, this is bad enough. That's bad enough. There was an Anglican church, an Episcopalian church, you may have been in America, where they had this practice that they called it the passing of the peace. So everyone would get up and start talking to each other. And the minister received a letter from one of his congregation. And this member of the congregation was actually worked in a law firm in the town. He sent a letter on the law firm's letterhead and everything. And it basically said, I'm writing to complain about the congregational ritual known as the passing of the peace. He said, I disagree with it, both personally and professionally, and I'm prepared to take legal action to cause it to stop. So the minister of the church phoned this lawyer to say, essentially, what's your problem? And the guy said, the passing of the peace is an invasion of my privacy. That's what he said. That was his argument. The passing of the peace is an invasion of my privacy. And the minister replied, fantastic response. Absolutely great. He said, well, like it or not, when you joined the church, you gave up some of your privacy. For we believe in a risen Lord who will never leave us alone. He said, you never know when Jesus Christ will intrude on us with a word of peace. That's a fantastic answer. I don't know if I would have, I don't know what happened, obviously, whether he let, went ahead with the lawsuit, but I thought, this is absolutely true. And I felt that was particularly true, what I felt was particularly relevant about this story is the idea that when you became a member of the Christian community, I'm not talking about becoming a member of the church, I'm talking about when you became a Christian, did you realize you had given up your rights, some of your rights, including some of your rights to things like privacy, some of your rights to doing things the way you want to do them. You gave those up the moment you said yes to Jesus. Did you read the small print? Did you realize that? That when you say yes to Jesus, you are, by definition, saying yes to his community too. And you no longer have the right to behave however you want, regardless of what other people think, believe, or need. You've given that up by being a part of the Christian community. And in most communities, and in most churches definitely, there are certain roles that need to be done for the group to fulfill its purpose, certain things that need to happen. For example, every Sunday there's an awful lot that needs to happen for a service to take place. And you heard about some of those things this morning. Some of you will know full well what's involved. And you either say, well, we need someone who can do this, so we'll employ them, or we'll just ask for volunteers. We need people with the right gifts, the right skill set. That's absolutely right and good and proper that we do this. But the core task of being a transformed community is to love each other. And that is one thing that not one of us is allowed to delegate to someone else. You can't delegate that to anyone else. Loving each other is a command that is given to each of us by Jesus. You cannot say it's a part of the church's job, but someone else is going to do it. If you're a part of this community, it is your responsibility to love one another. Some people think that things like loving each other is actually the minister's job. You know, you pay Eric, you pay Oz, what are they doing for their money? Should be loving each other. When I was a minister, this is something that happens, I think. I remember one member of my congregation coming to me. She'd had a difficult time. She said, you know, no one's been to visit me. No one's been to visit me. And I knew that wasn't true, because I knew just that week one of the elders had been to see her. But what she was saying by that is, you haven't been to visit me. You're the minister. It's your job to visit people. It's your job. And if the minister hasn't been, I haven't been visited. For some people, that's how they think. And that may be how churches work, but that is not how a transformed community works. It doesn't work that way. Now, the question is not really, are we a transformed community? It's, are we loving each other? That's really the question. Are we loving each other? That's really the question you need to ask yourselves this morning, that we need to ask ourselves this morning. I'm sure it's happening. That's the thing. I'm sure it's happening. And I'm also equally sure that most of this work, most of the core work of a transformed community, doesn't happen on Sunday mornings. Most of the time, it's going to be happening outside in the rest of the week, which is good. I think that's how it should be, because this is one of the most public parts of what we do, these kind of gatherings, these kind of meetings. This is what most people think of when they say, are you a part of a church? They're saying, do you go somewhere on a Sunday morning and stand and sing and listen to a monotonous monologue delivered by a moron to mutes? That's one description of the sermon anyway. But that's not the core work of a community. This gathering together on Sundays in the week, the core work is loving each other. And most of that will happen just in one-to-one encounters throughout the week. Just those moments that no one else knows about. I had a very profound experience back again when I was in the ministry. This public thing, this Sunday thing, this is always the part I found easiest about being a minister. Particularly the preaching is always, in fact, it's the only thing I ever felt competent at when I was in the ministry. And I remember getting a phone call to say one of the members, a fantastic guy, but he had all kinds of struggles. He'd actually had a psychotic episode and he'd been sectioned. And so he was in the locked psychiatric ward at the local hospital. Would I go and visit him? Of course. But, you know, I went there, I was young, I was inexperienced. What do I say? I didn't know what to say. So I go into this hospital, this sort of locked psychiatric ward. It's quite a depressing place. And I'm in this room and I sit with this guy. What do I say? And he just says, can you just read? So I get my Bible and he asks me to read the Psalms. So I just sit and I read the Psalms with him. And he just sits there and he weeps. So for half an hour or so, I'm just reading the Psalms and he's just weeping. That's all that happened. And then I go out and I go home. And I'm walking home and I'm thinking about what's just happened. And I couldn't shake this sense that almost as though God was saying to me, you know, James, doesn't matter how many sermons you preach, how fantastic your sermons are for the next, you know, 50 years, you will never do anything as important as what you've just done there. Because that act, even though I didn't know what I was doing, didn't know how to handle it. That is the core work of the church. That is the core work of a transformed community. It doesn't have to be part of the church's like formal business. You don't have to set up support groups to love each other. You don't think you need to organise anything or join a pastoral team. It can happen when you meet for coffee. Even if no one else knows about it, you just spend 20 minutes really listening to what's going on in someone's life. When you pick up the phone and say, I'll just give so-and-so a call, find out how their week's gone. When you've read a book and you think, you know what, I think so-and-so might really appreciate this book, and you pass it on. When it's just you and God, and you go into your bedroom, your study, you shut the door and you pray for each other. And no one knows but God. That is the core work of the church. That is what transforms a community and makes it the kind of community that shines. And other people look and say, there's something about them. There's something fantastic, something good about those people. And it is not Eric's responsibility. It's not Oz's responsibility. It's not even just the members' responsibility. It's everyone's responsibility. It's all of us. What does it mean to love each other? You know, you can say we need to love each other, but again, you start off saying we need to be a transformed community. You say, well, what does that mean? And I say, well, we need to love each other. And you say, well, what does that mean? Because, you know, love is one of those words. It's quite difficult, I think, to truly understand what love means, especially in this day and age where we get so many messages about what love really is. What does the Bible say about love? Well, do I actually need to spell this out to you? Do I need to? Because I think if you can just pick up, again, any of these New Testament letters, just open them randomly, you will find Paul saying to you, this is what it means to love each other. This is what you have to do. These are the kind of things it looks like. If I was going to sum it up in one phrase, sum up love in one phrase, this concept of love, biblically understood, I think the phrase I would go for is loving another. Loving each other means being in that moment what the person needs you to be in order for them to draw closer to God. Loving another means being in that moment what that other person needs you to be in order for them to draw closer to God. You need to remember that last bit, I think, because sometimes we think love is just, you know, patting someone on the back and saying, oh, they're there, which it can, that can be part of it, but that is not enough. It is about supporting one another in such a way that we help each other draw closer to Christ. And what that looks like will depend on what that person needs in that moment. Sometimes they will need a shoulder to cry on and comforting words. But sometimes they will need to be said, hang on, what you're doing is wrong. And you need to think about that. That can be just as a loving thing, a more loving thing, than letting someone just continue on the path they're on. I just picked a passage, Galatians 6, 1-5. I just picked it out. It's a passage I'm familiar with. It doesn't have to be this passage. There are plenty of them. But if you're sort of wondering where do I start, then maybe start here. Galatians 6, 1-5, just take these five verses, spend a week or so going through them, thinking about what it means. I've chosen this because I think this encapsulates so many different ideas of this sort of idea of love being what people need you to be. Because Paul starts off with, as I've just said, this idea of challenging each other. Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. But it's not just about what you do, it's also about how you do it. Because Paul says, but watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. So it's not just the case of, well, if you think someone's doing something wrong, just go and, you know, you're doing something wrong, bang, you're doing something wrong, aren't I a loving person? That's not what it means. You also have to be very aware of your what's going on in yourself in this moment. Make sure you are gentle. Make sure you are not just in sort of putting on this other person something that's in you. I've heard it said, I think it's true, I've heard it said, the thing that often annoys us most about other people is the thing we struggle with the most ourselves. I think that's probably true. I think C.S. Lewis, now this, I'm off script here, so, you know, Eric will know, he's memorized everything C.S. Lewis has ever said. I think C.S. Lewis said something like, the thing that stings us most about other people's pride is our own pride. It's our own pride that sort of annoys us and makes us be annoyed with other people's pride. I think there's some truth in that. So when you challenge each other, Paul says, be careful how you do it, but do it. I remember, in New Testament, I think it's Galatians, where Paul says, at one point I had to say to Peter, you know, Peter the apostle, the one who walked so closely with Jesus, I had to say to him, you know what, the way you're living is wrong, because Peter was very happily mixing with the Gentiles, the non-Jews, and then some Jews came from Jerusalem, and almost subconsciously, Peter kind of distanced himself from the Gentiles, and Paul says, you know, you've changed, Peter, you're doing something wrong. And why is he doing it? Because other people are being hurt by Peter's actions. Then Paul goes on to say this, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. So simple. You may think, what do you need to do to fulfill the law of Christ? Well, here's a long list of things you need to do and avoid doing. No, carry each other's burdens. It's that simple. I remember when I was in Australia, I was at home and there was a knock on the door and it was a guy called Dave. And Dave had just popped round, one of those, popped round for 5-10 minutes just to talk about something to do with work. Not a social call, just one of those moments. And while he was here at our house, the phone rang. And I answered it. And it was a hospital about 4 to 5 minutes away saying, we've got someone here. Basically, we had a guy in our community at the time. He was an alcoholic, and we'd had a what they call in Australia, I guess, a bust up. And he'd left the community, and he'd gone and got drunk. And what happened was he'd got drunk. The police had come, and they'd taken him to this hospital in Orange, about 45 minutes away, and they'd put him in the psychiatric ward there. Only got a couple of psychiatric ward stories. But they'd put him there. And anyway, the next day he'd sobered up and he was phoning. He's basically saying, can I come back? Can I come back? And I said, okay. So he wanted someone to go and collect him. And I put the phone down and I thought, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go. It's an hour and a half out of my day. I've got to go to this place I don't want to go to. I don't know where it is. I've got to collect this guy. And the last time we'd met, we'd had this things weren't right between us. So I said to Dave, oh, I've got to go and collect this guy. And Dave could tell. He could just tell that I really didn't want to do this. And he just said to me, do you want me to come with you? Do you want me to come with you? Didn't have to do that. You know, it's a chunk. He just popped round for 5 minutes to talk about something. And he was basically saying, I'm going to give up an hour and a half to come with you, support you in this moment. In that moment, he sensed I had a burden, and he made a choice. I will bear that burden for you. I will carry that burden with you. And I felt loved, and I have to say, when I was thinking about bearing burden, that was the thing that popped to mind. I don't remember a time where I've ever felt quite so helped or loved, and it was just a simple act of saying, I'll come with you. Why you do this difficult thing? So easy. It's not difficult. Well, actually, that's not strictly true. It can be very difficult sometimes. But it's not complicated. It's not this massive task to do. To bear one another's burdens. Then Paul goes on to say, I'll just briefly touch on this because I want to clarify this, because it almost sounds like he contradicts himself. He says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. So it almost seems like he said, bear one another's burdens, and then a couple of verses later he's completely forgotten that he said that, and he's saying, carry your own load. So it almost seems contradictory, but I think what he's basically saying, again, it's like this whole idea of challenging each other, but being aware of what's going on in yourself. He's saying, bear each other's burdens, but don't take advantage of others. Don't think, well, I don't have to do anything because the people in my church, they'll sort it out for me. They'll help me. I don't have to make the effort. It's almost like Paul's saying, bear each other's burdens, but you yourself test, make sure you're not taking advantage of your community. Make sure you're not placing on other people burdens that you yourselves are actually perfectly able to carry. And I think in a way, this sums up what it means to love. This whole idea of challenge each other. But be careful. Carry each other's loads. But be honest with yourselves about what's going on in you. It's this kind of, this balance between doing something but being aware of what is going on in yourselves. That's the only way you can truly love each other. So think about these things. Think about, what does it mean? What would it look like for me to actually love other people in this community? How can I love other people in this community? As I've said, it doesn't have to be this big, huge thing. If we're able to do this, I think if we're able to love each other, then that transforms us as a community. We become something different. And we become the type of community where other communities are transformed. Other communities see what's going on. And I want to stress, finally, my final point, I want to stress that this kind of love, this kind of transformation is what people see, even if things look bad when you're a part of the community. Even when things seem to be going terribly wrong, things are chaotic, if in the middle of all this we are continuing to love each other, people don't look at us and say, wow, they're messed up. They say, well, they're struggling, but look at how they're loving each other. Look at how they're supporting each other. That's the thing that stands out. That's what people see. It is not perfection that we need to show the world. It's that we love each other. That's it. If we're struggling as a group, for whatever reason, but we continue to love each other, that is what stands out. That's what people will notice. Thomas G. Long was invited to a church in a nearby town, and they said, we're going to do a special type of service, and we want you to sort of lead this service. And again, they had a fantastic, I thought, when I heard about this, I thought, that's a great idea for a service. It's a communion service. And they were just going to do a short service, a bit like this one, and then after that, they were all going to go out to the church hall or wherever, and there were tables. And on the tables were the ingredients for making bread. And they were all going to sit down in groups, and they were going to make their own communion loaves, and then cook them and share communion together as a group. Fantastic idea. And while they were waiting for the bread to cook, there were little activities and things they could do as a group to talk about their kind of faith journeys together. Sounds like a great service. But of course, you know, life is what happens when you make other plans. And what happens in a church, you've had a little service, you get out and you sit groups of people down at a table, including children, and there's flour and there's water and all kinds of things. What happens? There's flour everywhere. There's flour going everywhere. And of course, it's a church oven, so they've got all these breads and they're not cooking at the same speed. And people have been sitting talking together and they've gone through all the exercises they've been given. And they've run out of things to talk about. So you've got people sitting there just staring into space while bread's cooking in the other room and the children are, you know, making a mess. And it's, in other words, it's real life. It's chaos. And it's one of those services where everyone's thinking, how much longer? And Thomas Long said, they finally got to the end of the service, you know, in all the midst of this chaos, and he was so relieved. so he could finally finish this service. And he stood up to say a blessing at the end of the service. And he said the word, "The peace of Christ be with you all." And he said at that point, from somewhere in the room, a child's voice called out, "It already is. It already is." And he stopped and he thought, just that one phrase transformed the whole service. And I think that's almost like what it means to be a transformed community. Chaos, there's flour everywhere. People are staring into space, bored out of their brains. The bread's not cooking. But the peace of Christ is already here. That is what it means to be a transformed community. I think regardless of whatever's going on in the life and in the world, it's a community, a place where people say the peace of Christ is there. Look at how they love each other. Wouldn't you like to be part of a community like that? Wouldn't you like that to be this community? Because you won't find it outside, I don't think. You won't find that kind of peace, that kind of love in other communities. So let's think about that. Let's think about what we want our community to be, how we want to love each other, how we want to be transformed, so that around us other communities can look at us and say they love each other. And there's something that we want to be a part of there. There's something we want them to show us how we live as a community. Let's have a short prayer to close the sermon. Father, thank you for the fact that because you have loved us first, we are free to love others. That because we are transformed by Christ's life and death and resurrection, we can be a transformed community. So Father, help us just this week. Let us be listening to you so you can kind of drop that word in our ear. Hey, you know what would be good for you to do to show this other person that you love them? Just a little thing, Father. If this morning we are someone who's desperately in need of knowing that they are loved, Father, may you put it on someone's heart to say or do something that speaks very clearly to that person to make them know that they are part of this community and that through the community, God will bless and encourage them too. Amen.